Karma Bank.
Yeah, that's going to be in our new stage act, I think, for our band, the Fake Ayatollahs. Remember? We were going to start that punk band.
Yeah, we were. But Max, the new thing is the musical. I think we need a Max and Stacey musical.
Yeah, I want to have a Max and Stacey musical. Yeah, I see Viva Forever closed, the Spice Girls musical. But I think the Max and Stacey musical would be fantastic. You know, it starts off with the Ville France, Jamer in France, you know, very French themed. They're doing the can-can. I could wear a skirt, you know, and do the can-can.
And it would be actually quite appropriate for us to replace Viva Forever, because that corner, more than any other corner or block or 100 feet of space in London, we get identified and recognized more on that that corner for some reason than anywhere else. It's like a whole group of Kaiser Report and Truth About Markets fans hang out in front of Viva.
Yeah, well, it's the Whole Foods, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's like the yuppie demographic that seems to follow our show. The people who like to spend two or three times on a bag of radishes than they would normally spend on Tesco or some other place that you buy the same thing for a much less price. But no, Whole Foods gives it to you. They have specially picked radishes that are the perfect. No, actually, they're sized, you know, organically, so they're odd shaped. So you know they must be good because they're not perfectly shaped like a Tesco radish. They're odd. That means they must be good. They have dirt on them. They have real dirt. That's organic dirt from the farm. You know that must be good. You pay up for the dirt and all the you know, one thing it doesn't have are microtoxins. Now microtoxins apparently are the thing that'll kill you, and you find them everywhere, even in your coffee.
Well, the other thing I noticed about going into the Whole Foods near Piccadilly Circus is that half the time I go in there, like, the packages are open and somebody's eaten half the food. I'm sure those are the Truth About Markets fans.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the Big Lebowski effect. You remember the beginning of that show, that movie where he's drinking the milk at Ralph's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Ralph's of Los Angeles Institution.
Yeah. I used to do that when I went to UCLA.
Yeah.
We would always go into Rouse at 2 in the morning and eat.
Well, it's hard not to if you just smoke a big bowl of, you know, dope. You know, you end up at Rouse drinking milk right out of the carton with the Big Lebowski right then and there, and go and play a little bowling, do that kind of thing. It's hard not to do it.
I was surprised at how easy it was. I think it's harder these days because that was like the days before CCTV, way back in the olden days when you know you used to have to walk to school 2 miles each way.
Well, so everything is child protected now.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard, you know, if you want to get your kid accidentally, you know, to take too much Tylenol or something, at stage, you know, an event to get rid of the little kids or something, it's much more difficult now, isn't it?
Well, actually, did you see that latest study? So in Psychology Today yesterday, they were saying that 9% of school-age children in America have been diagnosed with ADHD and have to take medication to go to school.
Right.
Compared to France, where there's less than 0.5% have been diagnosed with ADHD. Now, do you think this is a convenient? It's an easy way to basically deal with young boys who are restless, because I know in my own family I've had my, you know, relatives, these young who are now over 18, but they were forced to take ADHD drugs if they wanted to be in school. They weren't allowed to go to public school, which is state school in America, that they weren't allowed to go unless they took these drugs.
Right. Well, who finances these studies? Who conducts these studies? It's the drug companies, aren't they? Because the response to these diagnoses is to take drugs. So and who puts forward the studies? It's the drug companies. Who lobbies the government to conduct the studies and then to supply the drugs for these children to be on these drugs? It's the drug companies. So it's the same thing across all industries now. Who writes the laws for the agricultural industry? The agricultural industry. Who writes the laws for the financial industry? Oh, it's the financial industry writes the laws for the financial industry. Who writes the laws for the accounting industry? Oh, it's the accounting industry. KPMG writes the laws. Mm. You see now there's a trend where KPMG and other of these big four accounting firms, they're moving into the Chamber of Commerce's, the Secretary of Commerce in the United States and in these other countries. They're recruiting the heads of these big four accounting firms who cooked the books to begin with, who allowed for the fraud to happen, to allow like a company like J.P. Morgan to put out a balance sheet. They say they've got $200 billion on the balance sheet. We know that they're insolvent. They have nothing on the balance sheet. It's a ghost economy. It's a ghost bank. There's no assets whatsoever. They've been rehypothecated an infinite number of times. There's nothing there. It's Casper the Ghost meets a chimera in a sea of nothingness. There's an enigma wrapped in a puzzle. There's absolutely nothing there, is it? It's quantum leaps into the void. You know, you could see yourself chasing your own tail if you jump onto that balance sheet. There's absolutely nothing there. Jamie Dimon is a guy who counts ghosts for a living. He's not even there. He himself is a hologram.
Now, but that's the thing, going back to where we started this conversation before we were chasing tails inside a hologram.
I chased tails in shortage. I noticed this morning when I went in to buy a pair of shoes, there was a very interesting tails to chase there.
Oh, Max. So... No, so I was talking about this ADHD and comparing the American children, which has 9% diagnosis of ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactive disorder, compared to French children, which only have less than 0.5%. So, I mean, do you think, however, it's also the, like, hologram of food and the like, being inside a hologram looking out onto nature, that American population tends to have more of that, like... Say in France, you know, they're much more in touch with the season and nature, as you see from the fruit and veg markets everywhere. And only things in season are pretty much available. Some things from their colonies, like mangoes and papayas, are available throughout the year. But in terms of any French fruit and vegetables, it's only in season. They grow their food. They're farmers. They have real farmers. They don't buy their food in packages and stuff like that. So, I mean, are they just more in touch with the nature, and part of nature of children is to be rambunctious and distracted and climbing, you know, little Timmy climbing up the pole instead of paying attention to the teacher, that this is sort of normal behavior?
Well, what's the big difference there? Pasteurization. And as it relates to cheese, so the French kids are eating unpasteurized cheese, raw cheese, raw milk, raw yogurt. And, of course, with that unpasteurized cheese, you end up with a lot of goat urine, cow urine, and that's the difference. That's why the French kids are so obedient, because they get that morning dose of cow piss that just makes them, you know, obedient to the parents, and they're ready to learn. They're ready to learn existentialism. They're ready to read Descartes. They eat cheese, therefore they are. And it's all about the cow piss. There's no micronutrients in the cow piss. There's no microtoxins in the cow piss. That's why they don't need those drugs. I mean, look at Madame Curie and Pasteur. Okay, what do? They study piss. They put the piss on the culture dish, the petri dish, and they say, oh, what is this? This is penicillin. And they started an entire industry. That's why the French kids are so well endowed with this cultural history, this legacy.
This is the Health Report with Max Kaiser and his own unique take on why you're not healthy.
Well, yeah, we're in some kind of loft somewhere in shortage, and the guy who runs this place gave me coffee spiked with coconut milk cream. Coconut cream. Coconut. It's coconut. It's the essence of coconut.
So, Max Kaiser.
Yeah.
I put out on Twitter at my... Twitter.com/StacyHerbert, StacyHerbert.
What?
Too many people follow you and not enough follow me.
Yeah, I got almost 60,000 followers. I'm going to be ahead of Faisal Islam this week now. I'm going to overtake Faisal, the Channel 4 guy.
So what we want to know here, I asked people to send in questions, and now there's actually too many of them that we're not possibly going to be able to answer all of these.
I hate those people, Twitter people.
But first of all, mm-hmm. The big story is Bitcoin for you this week. Mm. It's not so big in terms of the fact that it's stayed pretty stable. It was quite volatile while all the world's media suddenly focused on it when those when the U.S. Treasury made some sort of, they offered guidance on that they need to register as money transmitters these certain companies like Mt. Gox.
Mm.
Now, Mt. Gox had their Dwolla account raided. This was a Dwolla is a company in America which allows virtual currencies to be translated into dollars, and this is what Mt. Gox was using. Anyway, Mt. Gox on their bank account had not registered it as a money transmitter, and so their Dwolla account has been seized.
Mm-hmm.
But, Max Kaiser, mm-hmm. you are in the news this week as you and Founders Fund giving $2 million or, you know, as part of VC funds for BitPay.com. You want to talk about that?
Yes, I would. Thank you for asking that.
Somebody out there. It's,
thank you.
I think it's N.E.J. Roberts.
Yes, thank you, N.E.J. Roberts at Twitter, wherever. And, you know, the thing about Bitcoin is you had the post-Cyprus bump. Remember, it was $30 per Bitcoin. And then Cyprus hit, the crisis in Cyprus, where they seized bank accounts. And they were going to seize uninsured bank accounts, insured bank accounts. And this created a stampede into Bitcoin. Mt. Gox is a very rudimentary, poorly thought-out exchange. They got overwhelmed with orders, and the price spiked to 260. And as I said on Twitter, I said, look, this thing's going to trade up to 250, as I predicted on Twitter. And then it pulled back to around 100, 120. So it's building a nice, strong base at 100, 120. I think that's a great price. And there's a lot of support now from the major players in Bitcoin to keep it kind of in that price level, I think. I mean, my suggestion that there should be some price stability by actively managing the price from the major players in this space, I think, has been taken to heart. Bitcoin 2013 is in San Jose, a lot of interest. But the investment that you refer to is in a company called BitPay, which is one of the first companies to get into the Bitcoin business, and they are essentially the PayPal of Bitcoin. Now, it's interesting that Peter Thiel, who, along with myself, invested in this round for BitPay, which is the second seed round for the company. They did one seed round last year. This is the second seed round. This is not yet the first VC round yet, Series A. This is still the seed rounds that we're talking about. They raised $2 million in this round. And so the company wants to be the PayPal of Bitcoin. They're signing up with something like 100, 150 new customers every single day.
But Peter Thiel, who is he?
He is, of course, the guy behind PayPal.
He founded it. He's no longer involved, really. He sold most of his shares. He still has a huge chunk. I think it's almost 5%.
The funny thing is that I was asked to participate in one of the early rounds of PayPal.
Oh, my God.
When I was still in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Which I didn't take advantage of. That's now, I think, worth $20 billion or something.
Yeah.
So that was a mistake I made at that time, I would say. So, of course, the whole Bitcoin phenomenon is based on this idea of virtual currencies that I have a strong background in.
Yeah.
And so BitPay, they've done their round. Now, Coinbase did a $5 million round the week before. They've attracted
but
some...
But Coinbase is a different service to BitPay, what BitPay offers.
Yeah, Coinbase is... They do business in all three of the major of the Bitcoin-related businesses, the wallet, the exchange, and the transactions.
So yeah, the wallet is, I think, the most important thing to get it to the mainstream normal person out there, because right now what you always hear about is these thefts of Bitcoins. And how that happens is basically it's cash. It's digital cash. It's real. It's like holding dollars, and if you drop your 20 pounds on the ground, you lose it.
That's right.
So you have to secure your cash and make sure it's in a wallet and the wallet is safe. So that's been the real problem, I think, for the mom and pop out there, or Joe Bag of Donuts, as we call them, to adopt it. But so Coinbase is working on a wallet, a more secure, simpler, easier to use wallet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they've got their finger in the three major pies.
Yeah.
And they've attracted some big-name VC-type money with that $5 million round. Then you have also BitInstant. It turns out that last fall, the Winkle-Schnickel brothers from Facebook fame made $1.5 million investment in BitInstant last fall, but they did not announce it until this week.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay,
that's just been announced. Because they came out and said that they own 1% of all Bitcoins, of the 11 million Bitcoins that have been created, they own
1%. Yeah.
And I believe they do that through a company in Malta called Exant.eu.
Yeah.
That makes a market in a Bitcoin-related exchange-traded fund.
And you're going to Exant.eu's conference this weekend. Next Saturday, actually, we'll be coming to you from Portugal. We're going to be in Lisbon, and Max will be speaking there.
That's right.
I also wanted to say, I saw, I think it was Peter Thiel or somebody from his organization, from the Founders Fund, who was saying about why they like BitPay is, so here's a guy who created BitPal, and he says that he visits a lot of these sort of companies, cash transmitters and online, and he said you know, they have thousands of employees, hundreds of employees, and they, over half of them are dealing with fraud. That's their entire, you know, all the fraud that goes on. And he said, it pointed out, as BitPay, Tony Galippi, our friend, that there's been zero cases of fraud. It's fraud-free currency.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's instant transaction, almost instant transaction, and fraud-free. So that's why he said he invested in BitPay. This is what he sees as a very powerful reason to get behind it.
Yeah, their track record is something like they've had many, many tens of thousands of transactions without a single chargeback or claim or problem at all. They're batting 1,000. They've not had a single problem with thousands, tens of thousands of transactions.
Yeah.
And we know we use them through Pirate My Film, and it's worked out fantastically well. And we first met Tony Galippi in Prague during a Bitcoin-related event a couple of years ago where we first kind of was introduced to the company.
Well, he told me the last time we saw him in London when he came onto our show that actually he said he created BitPay after seeing Kaiser Report interview John Matonis. And John Matonis, 2 years ago in May of 2011, he came onto Kaiser Report and talked about Bitcoin, which was quite new at that time. I mean, it was new to, you know, we were new in the media, international media space. There was obviously 2 years ahead of that where only geeks knew about it and these tech guys and hackers. But, you know, it was like at $6 then. And he talked about it. So Tony said he saw this interview and it inspired him to create BitPay.
Right. So we've been had a huge influence on the space one way or another through talking to these people in the Bitcoin space. And of course, going back to the virtual securities and things that I was involved with 15 years ago. But going forward, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, because at the end of the day, to use another kind of jargony word from the corporate world, Bitcoin is highly disruptive, to use yet another phrase from the corporate world.
Yeah.
And it's highly disruptive to who? It's highly disruptive to the banks and the central banks. So the question is, and we see that already because the regulators are freaking out. Department of Homeland Security tried to do a thing with Dwolla and Bitcoin and Mt. Gox. We've seen other FinCEN, the U.S. Financial Services regulator, came out with a ruling. So they're kind of circling this thing, trying to figure out what to do with it. Meanwhile, the elegance of the protocol, the Bitcoin protocol, as iterated by Satoshi Nakamoto, is, you know, I... What's that? No?
Max isn't Satoshi.
No, I'm not Satoshi. But it is a genius that you'd have to go back. You know, I mean, the space is full of hyperbole, so, you know, it's easy to dismiss what I'm about to say. But you'd have to go back to Gutenberg's press to find something as revolutionary and disruptive as Bitcoin. Certainly P2P, BitTorrents, and these things, that the way they've transformed the music industry and the video industry and the distribution industry and the software industry. Okay, now apply that to money and banking. So you see the way Hollywood reacted to BitTorrents. They got Chris Dodd at the MPAA. They hounded Aaron Schwartz. His father at the funeral said Chris Dodd. Essentially, he said, and I paraphrase, Chris Dodd, MPAA's head, murdered my son, essentially, which is, you can make that connection. Because
MPAA is a Motion Picture Association of America.
Right. They're the lobbyist group for Hollywood, for the copyright industry.
Global police force.
Yeah, global police force. So they essentially took out Aaron Schwartz. So that's how they reacted to, you know, melodramatic, cheap Hollywood thrillers. So how is the banking industry going to react to something, BitTorrents as applied to currency? So let's say that they go ballistic. Let's say they apply the full force of their regulatory authority and their military authority, and they try to stop it. Can they stop it? I say no. I say they can't stop it because the protocol is the work of pure genius. And you have to go back throughout history to find, like, Copernicus discovering, you know, that the Earth revolves around the sun. It's not the other way around. Once you said that, you can't go back. No amount of Christian dogma, church dogma, could reverse that fact. It was out of the bag.
Yeah.
You know, once Faraday made the connection between energy and mass, you can't go back. When Einstein made the relation between light and energy and mass, you can't go back. The cat's out of the bag. You know, once Satoshi says that you can mine, you know, these numbers using massive distributed computer power to create something that's as elegant as Bitcoin, we're not going to go back. It's impossible. There's going to be a change.
Well, that was a very good answer to what's happening with the whole Bitcoin thing. And of course, I've been reading a lot, you know, there was a kind of slowdown for a while about, you know, people exchanging videos online on BitTorrent sites. But because there were so many crackdowns by the successful crackdowns by the MPAA, and they really went after the Pirate Bay guys, those founders and blah, blah, blah. But the latest thing is that now virtual private networks have emerged, and most people are now using that. So it's back to thriving because they managed to basically, if you use your iPhone here, for example, you can't go to Pirate Bay. It says, you know, blocked. You're not allowed to go to this content. And there's other sites like that that you can't, they won't allow you to access it unless you use a virtual private network, VPN, and then of course you can. So people are just using this. So you can't stop progress and advancement. It doesn't, it's impossible. Once the idea is out there, you're saying it's too late.
Yeah. So the question is how much of a battle will ensue? I mean, the interesting is that a lot of the VCs now getting into the Bitcoin space, of course, you know, they're going to be conflicted at some point because there's a huge disconnect between the status quo that's going on now and what the Bitcoin offers. So a lot of these, like Peter Thiel of PayPal is a good example. PayPal is sucked up by the establishment. All these pay services like Square has been, you know, sucked up by the current system, the banking system. Mm. You know, you need a dongle, as they say. And once you have the dongle to do a transaction, you know, you're part of the state again. You're an apparatus of the state. Now with Bitcoin, you're completely outside of that. So are these guys ready to take the political action necessary? Are they going to take the position? Are they going to go to battle with the state? Are we going to see that? Mm. And so that's why I love when the price goes higher, because if the price goes to 260, suddenly the people are emboldened to challenge the state. If it goes to 10,000, which I think it will do, and then 100,000 per Bitcoin, which it certainly can do easily enough, then the entire balance of power changes, because the ability to buy laws in Washington will be financed by Bitcoin millionaires and billionaires who have made all the money on Bitcoin, and the people holding fiat trash will be pushed aside.
Well, I was just looking up on my little iPad here, and I'm checking, by the way, I'm checking the Twitter feed. So don't tweet me now, because we're pre-recording this. But just so you know why I'm looking down, looking for this. But there's, you know, the BlackRock, former BlackRock managing director was quoted about, he was asked for some reason, he's a professor now at UPenn, I think. He was asked about Bitcoin, and he said that the authorities in America have become hysterical, so that they're, which is an interesting word, that they've responded to this idea with hysteria.
Yeah, usually they use a lot more coded words, like they're concerned, they're looking at this with interest. They don't tip the hand that they're actually running around hysterical, because they see what's happening. Yeah. You know, they see what's, because they, again, the music industry, the software industry.
And explain who BlackRock is, so the significance of this, like, you know, they're a big, giant fund, a primary dealer too, aren't they, or?
Well, BlackRock, they've made now huge amounts of money in these exchange-traded funds.
Yeah.
So they market a huge number of these. I think iShares is now marketed by BlackRock. And that's nothing but just a rentier level. They're just putting in a fee to sell the same thing to people. You know, ETFs are just how to increase the cost of doing stuff. You know, let BlackRock take their cut for no reason whatsoever. And they make huge amounts of money just basically skimming cream off the top. As private equity investors, again, they use money that they're borrowing at 0%. If they make a mistake, the state bails them out. So they're just kind of marauders. They're pirates, essentially. I think, Larry Fink or somebody's over there now, one of the principals.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of these private equity pirate ships that just float around.
But they're mega. I mean, they're one of the top five. I mean, if you look at the private equity thing, when we did that thing for Al Jazeera, we made the film about private equity.
Yeah.
It's basically five of them in the world. Carlyle Group being one of the biggest, if not the biggest.
Yeah.
And then there's a huge drop. down into
right.
in
they,
terms of
they
how
leverage
much people,
our government contracts like Cerberus, which is has a former Treasury of America. You know, the three-headed dog from ancient tales is part of this private equity group, and they go around. You know, I noticed
those
something
black stone, black rock. I get those two.
Yeah, they like black water. You know, they think they are. They think they're black.
But
they
black,
think they're
black,
funky.
Black,
they think
black
they're
rock.
Pimps. They think they're up in the ghetto town throwing down with hoes and shit. But that ain't true. They're just white crackers from the suburbia skimming cream off the top, man. They ain't nothing. They don't got nothing. Trick bag. They got nothing.
Hey, honey, listen. I was with you when you and I were in Greenwich Village in New York City the first time you'd been.
I'm not a cracker.
That guy. That was the
He was
first
talking about you. He's saying, you cracker. Why are you hanging out with Brother Max? Brother
never
Max
in my
is a soul brother number one.
Some guy, black guy on a bicycle rode past us when we were sitting outside at a cafe in Greenwich Village. Max hadn't been back to New York City in, 15 years at that point. And we had just come off the plane, just sat outside at the cafe. And this guy rides by, look at you crackers.
He was talking about you.
He used the plural.
Did he? All right, maybe. Well, that's one guy. He can't base an entire, resurrection of James Brown and the Funk Nation on some random dude on a bicycle. No.
So the headline here reads, ex-BlackRock MD, U.S. raid on Bitcoin exchange's hysterical reaction. Now, BlackRock, I think, has actually uses your technology, the virtual specialist technology.
They all rip it.
No, if you go to Google and check out your patent, Timothy Maxwell Kaiser, and the virtual specialist technology, it shows at the bottom all the derivatives of it that people who...
They reference it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that reference it. And the top three or four, JP Morgan, BlackRock,
because
CME
it's
group,
a derivative. So
CME
in other words,
group in New
an
York
exchange
Stock.
Traded fund is a derivative of an actual equity. So you need my technology, which is for trading virtual securities with a virtual currency, to do it. So that's why they reference it.
So it's interesting that they're then in the same space that you were with the virtual.
Yeah, when I look in the mail at the end of the month, I don't see my check. I don't see my commission. Where's my commission?
Okay, come on, cracker.
I don't see that.
Only a cracker would ask that, you see?
No, I think any reasonable person would be asking, where's my money? That's what I want to know. Where's my money?
So, the Department of Homeland Security secured a warrant to seize an account tied to Tokyo-based exchange Mt. Gox, which handles 80% of all trading in the fledgling digital currency Bitcoin. Now, John Rushman, he's the former BlackRock managing director. He says, quote, it is a little bit of a hysterical reaction from the U.S. authorities. There are concerns of Bitcoin being used in illegal ways, but unless there is more substantial evidence of this, I don't think there is any reason to shut down the main Bitcoin exchange. U.S. dollars, Russian rubles, and euros have all been used by criminals, but nobody is suggesting their central banks should be closed down and their governors imprisoned. We are...
Yeah, well, he makes a couple of boneheaded remarks there. There's no central bank for Bitcoin, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, you don't even need an exchange. There's an emergence of a pure Bitcoin economy. People mine Bitcoin and then trade in Bitcoin amongst themselves for goods and services. They may never, ever have to leave that Bitcoin space. They may never, ever have to touch a dollar again or any other fiat currency from a central bank ever again. You can stay completely in the Bitcoin universe if you so desire, which is one option. If worse comes to worse, if the America goes full board psycho and tries to shut down this major source of competition and growth, which would be great for the American economy, then it'll just go purely Bitcoin to Bitcoin. Everyone just say, okay, America, adios, muchachos. We're starting our new Bitcoin global country, and you're not invited.
Well, but speaking of the miners, that was the other story this week that was really interesting. Regarding Bitcoin. And then we'll move on from Bitcoin in a bit to silver because there's lots of questions about silver. But Bitcoin mining operation tops world's fastest supercomputers. Let's move on to the Bitcoin opening paragraph. And then compare the statistics to the world's most powerful supercomputers. One exaflop has now been used by Bitcoin this past week. Is over 8 times faster than the combined speed of the top 500 supercomputers in the world. So FLOPS is a term that you may have seen most in graphics card specs, and it stands for floating point operations per second, or how many math problems it can do, or maths problems, as they say here, it can do in 1 second. An exaflop can calculate One quintillion math problems per second. Compare that to the most powerful supercomputer in the world, currently IBM Sequoia, pictured below. And only on the video can you see that. That's the world's fastest computer. That's what a Macintosh, essentially, what a Macintosh can do, used to look like. The power of a current Macintosh or an IBM or whatever. Which only does a measly 16.3 petaflops, that big computer there.
That's the Jimmy Savile version.
Oh, my God. Okay, and you really have something. But anyway, so Bitcoin, they produced a Bitcoining hash. The conversion comes out to one Bitcoin mining hash equaling 12.7 thousand flops.
Right.
But it amounted to an exaflop this week, which is bigger than these 500 supercomputers.
Yeah, well, it's important because this takes away the comment, well, what about competing cryptocurrencies? Isn't that going to be a problem for Bitcoin? And the answer is, as you just described it, this is the largest distributed computer network ever devised in history. Yeah. And this is what become the standard model to develop the cryptocurrency.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there, anyone to compete with Bitcoin would have to replicate this hashing power.
Including like the NSA. People say, oh, the NSA or CIA can just corner it. But they would need...
They would need to replicate those
500. They would need to secure those 500 computers. And even then, that would just equal...
Yeah.
The power of the people.
The cat's out of the bag. That's what I'm saying. The NSA can't catch it. Nobody can catch it. It's a cyber Christ. It's come to save the world, and nobody can catch it. Now, you've got, you could say it's analogous to somebody who would say, well, what about another cryptocurrency comes along, and it would, you know, be dilutive to the to Bitcoin? And I say, well, you know, theoretically, somebody could build a new interstate highway system in America. Mm-hmm. And it would be competitive to the current interstate highway system. But in order to do so, you would have to raise all the money that was raised in the 1950s times the rate of inflation. So it would be like $250 billion. And then you'd have to lay out the highway system, and it would be competing with the current highway. You know, it's not going to happen, is it? So this is similar to cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. You're not going to just suddenly come up with 500 megacomputer hashing power, you know, and compete with Bitcoin. And this is another reason why... This frickin' thing, the genie's out of the bottle, and people tend to misunderstand the power of the Bitcoin protocol. So, no, you can't just come up with a competing cryptocurrency.
Well, that's the answer to all those questions about Bitcoin. There were several of them. Now somebody asks, ZXCV73A asks, how does life come from non-living matter?
I'm glad you asked that question. This is the chicken and egg problem, but applied to the... universe. It's a kind of a meta problem. Now, of course, we know the answer, but the question is, do we want to share the answer? Because a lot of the people listening to the show, they're on drugs.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, they drop acid, I think, or this guy, ecstasy. Yeah.
Because he also tweets and says that your latest episode, 446, is out, so please retweet it.
Right. He's on drugs. So what happens is if you do a truth bomb, you know, it could explode their brains, and they might die. So we, as responsible, you know, per Ofcom says you can't explode truth bombs on the air that explodes people's
okay,
brains that are on drugs.
That.
So we know the answer, but we're not going to say the answer at this time.
So lots of people have asked about silver as well.
Yes.
They're asking, well, we've had another big down week, you know, down few days in terms of the...
I really haven't been looking. Is it down?
Yeah, I think it felt like... I think 6 or 7%, I think. It's like just under $23 silver.
Right.
It's funny because, to put it into context, so when we were buying silver back at $7, $8, mm-hmm. So when people say it's crashed, it's hard, you know, you're thinking in different terms. They say the same thing with Bitcoin because it was up for a few hours up to 260.
Right.
And now it's at 120. But for 2 years, we saw it between $2 and $6. So, you know, it's hard when they say it's crashed, but to us, it's obviously up, you know, 40-fold or something like that. But people are asking about the price, which is, we're going to talk this week on Kaiser Report. We're talking to Sandeep Jaitley of Bullion Basis about this, and also Jim Rickards from Currency Wars about this. But they also want to know about the Kaiser Ethical Silver. Mm-hmm. And where about that coin, and you know how they can get it cheaper?
Yes,
Well, that's funny because those are two competing claims. This is actually an interesting point because one thing you're seeing is Western investors, retail investors, are selling paper claims to gold. It's not even actually a claim to gold or silver. It's a paper representation of the price of gold and silver mm-hmm. on the GLD or SLV shares. But there's record demand for physical silver. I mean, you see the Chinese housewives, which we covered, bought 500 tons of physical gold in the course of 2 weeks.
Right. It's a paper claim on an illegitimate price.
Yeah.
That's what an ETF is because that's not the cash price.
No. So here you have these some people concerned about the price mm-hmm. going down and this other person saying, how can I acquire more for a lower price?
Right. Well, as people have pointed out, this is an interesting phenomenon in markets that I don't think anyone has really seen before, that the demand for gold and silver is at an all-time high from central banks and retail investors. There's never been more demand for gold. Central banks are aggressively buying gold. They started buying gold for the first time in 40 years in 2009. Mm-hmm. They've been increasing their purchases of gold. Retail investors in Asia, in China, in India are forming queues out the door in Australia to get their hands on gold and silver. So what's happening to the paper price, the price that's concocted in London and New York based on the futures price, which is determined by guys in New York, the same guys who determine LIBOR, the same guys who determine the credit default swap index that they manipulate, the same guys that determine the various bond indices
so
that they manipulate.
The London fix.
So these prices are down concurrently with New York Stock Exchange and these other exchanges moving up. So you have a very interesting period now where you've got extremes in the bond market where they're increasing supply almost exponentially around the world. Bond flotation, government bonds, the supply of bonds are increasing at all-time record highs, and yet the price goes higher.
Yeah.
So here's a complete refutation of supply and demand. You're increasing supply dramatically, price is going higher. On the gold and silver side, demand has been increased exponentially, price goes lower. So clearly, the entire price signal that you'd expect from a supply and demand free market capitalist system has ended. We're in a post-capitalist period now.
Yeah.
So you can't look at the price and draw any conclusions in terms of price giving accurate signals. It means nothing. The paper price is meaningless. Now, at some point, there will be a reversion to the mean. At one point, these markets will come back in line with some normalcy, and you'll see gold and silver. Gold will be suddenly $2,500, $3,000 an ounce in the space of 2 days. So if you weren't in, too late. And the Dow Jones Industrials will go from 15 or 16 or 17,000 down to 8,000.
Yeah.
But that'll all happen in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, actually on Monday or possibly Wednesday's show of Kaiser Report, we might focus on this piece by Gillian Tett in the FT, and she's discussing a Citigroup report out just this past week talking about, they have basically an assembly of charts showing the striking. They really are pictures that tell 1,000 words, and that, you know, decades-long correlations have suddenly broken wildly. So, for example, the stocks, you know, the German stock market, I guess, the European stock markets, they always correlated almost exactly to unemployment. And now they've gone in totally different directions. Suddenly in the last year and a half, 2 years, they've broken their link. The same with a whole variety of factors. They list a whole bunch of them, whether it's warnings, earnings reports, warnings and downgrades and things like that. Everything is spread apart. The level of debt that a company has, usually the more debt the company has, the more their bonds yield. But they're going in opposite directions now. The more debt they have, the lower their yields are going. Mm-hmm. So all of these, like chart after chart, it's amazing. There's about 40 that have been correlated for the last 40 years, and suddenly none of them are correlated. So they have to go back, and it's going to be a wild snap. It has to.
Well, you see this appear in other mother markets, like the art market, for example.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about it today, which we should talk about this trend in the modern art market where the current living artists that can create multiple art artifacts, multiple paintings, their prices are rising more than artists that are dead that cannot create more original art because they're dead. Now, usually in the art market, it works the other way around. The old masters, because they're dead, the prices go up. In the art market, it has flipped. Now the prices for old masters are stagnant, and the prices for young, completely unknown artists are rising because of their ability to crank out more supply, because it's controlled by monopolists. We saw this in the UK with Saatchi & Saatchi, who created Damien Hirst. Damien Hirst is just an average guy, artist, nothing special, but Saatchi & Saatchi created this idea that you could monopolize his oeuvre, his inventory, his supply, and then you could parse it out and control the market and manipulate the market. Mm-hmm. So we've had the scandals in the past with Sotheby's and other auctioneers where they themselves are participating in the market to manipulate the prices of art. Of course, Andy Warhol is kind of the progenitor of this idea of factory. You know, he worked in the factory, didn't he? He's just creating, an assembly line of art, and the value goes up, not based on any kind of what would previously be considered an aesthetic value, but on the ability to crank out more of the same. So this is really, the art world has had that interesting inversion of economic principles, but now it's been applied to the general economy so that companies and governments are printing bonds that have no intrinsic value. The U.S. government bond has no intrinsic value because the U.S. government has no ability to pay those bonds ever. They have $15 trillion outstanding in debt on the books. They've got another $50 trillion in debt off the books, a $65 trillion in debt for America. Are they ever going to be able to pay off that debt? No, never, ever, ever. They're going to have to default. They're going to have to inflate. They're going to have to that those are the two options. They're never going to have the growth to pay off the debt. So therefore, they've completely transformed this market using algorithmic trading, using computer trading, using high-frequency trading to create a price. That price has no relation to value. It has no relation to objective value. It's pure propaganda, pure price propaganda, until it breaks. And when it breaks, it's going to break hard. It's going to be every 5 or 10 years you have a massive crash in these markets, whether it's dot-com, housing, 87 crash, Asian financial crash, Mexican peso crash. Every 5, 10 years is a major crash. They build it up and they crash it again. Now we're at a point where this crash that's coming, without a shadow of a doubt, will be the most spectacular crash ever in the history of the world. It's going to be fantastic to watch. I'm looking forward to it. Gold is going to go to $10,000 an ounce. Mm. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, the piece, I was looking for it online, but it was in the Evening Standard on Friday. And I left it at that restaurant. But it was really interesting because they said, so here was Turner, for example, who radically altered the way we perceive art and the way art painting was done. And yet some unknowns are hotter items and sell for more partly because they're unknown. So people don't know what they're buying. It's what they want the markets to be, because the less the investor knows about it, somebody's making a lot of money. The guy selling you your shares or whatever, your ETF, the less you know about it, the more they can take, basically scam you.
Right, because Turner also, or the old masters, their works are in museums all over the world. Yeah. There's no dominant monopolist in the space.
Yes, they specifically mentioned that there's no monopolies. That's the problem with impressionists, they said, is that you can't monopolize it.
Right. So they admit it.
Yeah.
That it's run by monopoly pricing and scam pricing. And they say that's a good thing. In the new art world, they call it art.
Yeah, but the investors are out of control. They want that. Like they because they want to be in on, just like they wanted in on Madoff's thing, everybody who wanted in on Madoff, they wanted in on Madoff because they thought he had a way to scam the market, because his returns were too good to be true. And they knew, because he was part of the guy who created NASDAQ, that he had some way of front-running the markets. Mm-hmm. So they wanted in on it. They wanted in on the scam.
Well, the only thing people want is a higher price.
Yeah.
And they want to make money.
Yeah.
So economics is an interesting field where if the price is going up, it's because you're smart.
Yeah.
If the price is going down, it's because somebody else is dumb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So as long as art prices are going up, if you say art's going up because we've created a Ponzi scheme and a monopoly pricing position, and it's completely fake, all anyone ever heard in that statement was prices are going up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They didn't hear the other three parts of that sentence. The mind blocks it out. That's called economics. It's psychoeconomics. The mind blocks it out. You hear nothing. So then when the prices crash, as of course they will, just like if you throw something up in the air, gravity means it'll come down to Earth. Yeah. The only thing people will be saying is that it had nothing to do with their own stupidity. It had nothing to do with their own gullibility. It was purely some other guy's fault. They're the people that did it. It's their fault. I had nothing to do with it. That's all they'll
hear. One of the things they said is, for example, this auction in New York this past week, there was this, you know, maybe he's known by his friends and in the New York community, but nobody on the show would probably recognize the guy's name. It was some Joe Bag of Donuts. He's a painter. And they were expecting to get at $1.5 million for his painting, and it went for $6.5 million. People were surprised. But they were saying that it goes well with hardwood floors, which are a bit...
Right. It goes well with hardwood floors, yeah. So we're going to spend $6 million for it. So if I paint my floor that looked like that painting, can I sell art that's made out of hardwood floors? Of course, because it goes well together. It should be the same thing.
Yeah.
But the strange thing... going forward will be how this all reconciles, which is not going to be pretty. It'll be, again, the most shocking dislocation in prices that we've seen yet. And I've seen some wicked ones. I was working on Wall Street during the 87 crash, which is a 20% drop in a day, in a day and a half. I mean, that was a shocking crash. I was working in the dot-com business in 2000 when the dot-com on NASDAQ, you know, NASDAQ dropped from 5,000 to 1,000. That was an 80% drop. It's worse than the Depression almost, the Dow Jones back in the 30s.
Yeah, but you know, during the NASDAQ crash, like, you can think of loads of billionaires who lost all their money. You had loads of, you know, people yourself who lost money, who became bankrupt, lost everything they had, they thought they were doing. Like, that hasn't happened in this last crash. None of the Angelo Mozzillo on the subprime side to any of the bankers on Wall Street, none of these guys have lost any of their money, unlike with a NASDAQ crash or 87 crash, you knew people who lost money.
Okay, so if the price quoted for a worthless piece of art was $1.5 million and went to $6 million or $7 million, that's inflation.
Yeah.
So where's its inflation? The inflation is that the central banks are printing money to bail out banks, and the way the money system works is that the speculators get first crack at the money.
Yeah.
So they hoard the money on artworks. And then those will trickle down at some point. It hasn't hit the general economy. There's a lagging effect. So you don't see it in the price, although you see creeping inflation in the price in Britain and in America. So the government says here the inflation is running at 2.8%. In fact, if you look at the shopping cart inflation, the inflation of stuff that people actually buy, food, energy, insurance, and these other types of products, inflation in the UK is running right now at 9%, which is very high, and it's trending a lot higher. In the UK, in the US, also, inflation is running now at 12%. Mm. Real inflation is running at 12%. So also to get...
Well, the things you need. So look, they were in the Evening Standard as well. They were saying that the price of rents went up almost 9% in
London. Right, and the government here is what? They're making it easier to speculate in the real estate market. The government is underwriting and subsidizing speculation in real estate. Yeah. Most people are not speculating in the real estate market. They're paying the rent, so that's going higher. But when the government comes out with a report saying how's inflation doing, they do not include rent. They only include things
even though
like,
that's like up to half of people's monthly expenses.
They don't include it. Why don't they include it? Because it looks bad. Because it's cosmetically, it would interfere with this price propaganda. People would say, wait, there's inflation? Let's dump bonds. If they dump bonds, then the four major banks in this country are going to be insolvent. They already are insolvent. They will be insolvent. That day of reckoning is coming for bonds. And it'll be a shock, and everyone responsible will say, we never saw it coming. It's not me. It's some other guy. Oh, my God. Let's bail everybody out. Let's go to war. Let's kill some people. Let's start a war. You know, that'll be the response. No one will take responsibility.
Yeah, and so you were talking about the, you know, this art, basically. The reason why these investors prefer this contemporary art that is by unknowns is because they can create monopolies on this unknown name. You're not allowed to know anything about the person, basically. And and the owner themselves of the gallery is the one that creates this price. And look.
Yeah, well, it's a Ponzi scheme.
I paid $1 million for this year, and I just sold it to my daughter for 10.
Right.
from my other bank account.
Right, and I'm booking that 9 million pound difference. I'm buying, you know, I'm going to buy maybe something that will have a value going forward, assets, real assets. You know, precious metals, minerals, oil, things that will eventually have value post-crash.
Yeah.
So that's one way to make a tremendous amount of money. One thing we predicted on this show 3 or 4 years ago, which is now coming true, is that we said at the time, of course, people thought this was shocking. We said that Greece would start selling islands to pay off the debt. It just came out now that after this Emir of Qatar bought
three or four islands,
of the most famous, biggest islands, now there's a sudden retail trade. All these fly-by-night hedge fund managers in their ilk are buying islands in Greece now.
They were afraid to do it. They were afraid to be the first ones.
But that was the purpose of crashing the Greek economy. That's why Goldman Sachs and John Paulson got together with Papandreou to cook the books when they entered the euro, to fraudulently create this crisis, to make billions on the crash, because they just wanted a place to go where it was sunny.
I noticed that Jeffrey Sachs, who has also been, everybody's talking about this, he was speaking to the Philadelphia Fed. They had some sort of conference, and he was, beamed in to this conference. And he pointed out that he referred to that John Paulson, Lloyd Blankfein raping of Greece, he called it. And he was... This is
very strange.
He stole this from you,
sure. He did.
Because he was at Kilkenomics, Economics and Comedy Festival in Kilkenny, Ireland. And he didn't actually, you were on stage with him that very first night, and he sat there like this the whole time. And then he was supposed to be with you the following night, and he didn't show up. He didn't want to be on stage with you. But you were saying all that stuff, and the audience was going wild and blah, blah, blah. But it was almost word for word the stuff he was saying in this conference.
I exploded his head.
Yeah.
Because the next day I exploded his head so bad that he couldn't even show up. He stayed in his hotel room in a fetal position drinking non-microtoxin coffee with coconut butter. And he tried to commune with Satoshi Nakamoto and the Bitcoin gods of the universe. And he came out a year later. And he's doing my act.
He stole your
shit. Again, where's my money? Where's my money? What's this guy's name? Jeffrey Sachs?
Jeffrey Sachs.
Where's my money? Where's my money, Sachs? You stole my act. Putz.
You know what? I forgot to press the timer at the beginning.
You figure it's a good thing I've got backup. We've got 8 minutes. 8 minutes left. See? I keep track of this stuff.
You're good. You're good at it.
Residence 104.4 FM in London.
I was just about to do that.
I saw your lips about to make the words.
You stole my act. That's my shtick. Where's my money?
Where should we go after the show? That's the big question.
Yeah.
We're in shortage.
Speaking of shortage, you talk about, I remember you talking to those people, you out there in shortage, put down your bong.
Yeah.
Well, we were looking at apartments, flats to rent.
Mm.
And we went into this one place, me, Max, and the estate agent. And as soon as we walked in, I was like, whoa, there's so much marijuana smoke in this place. Mm. And neither of you two, you were like, no. And then, of course, we looked down, there's a giant bag of marijuana there. And you guys were like, wow, oh my God, this is marijuana. But I got stoned. I was stoned from being in that. Remember my eyes got all bloodshot and all watering.
Yeah,
and
occupational hazard, doing the pod show.
Hanging out with Shoreditch.
Shoreditch, It's like Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I found that big bag of dope in Amsterdam. I'm like, this place is crazy. But that flat we visited yesterday did not have a big bag of grass. It had a small bud.
It was a small bag. But I thought
it
was poetic license. I kind of enhanced the amount just for the storage for effect.
Well, we're not making this stuff up. This is true. The people in Shoreditch are smoking dope all day long. Okay. Then they go and they buy like a 500 pair of sneakers. Then they go and they try to, make ends meet by whatever means, selling chicken, fried chicken, whatever it is they do over here. I don't know what it is. What do they do over here? They sell fried chicken? Is it a fried chicken thing?
No, this is one of these fake economies where people just hang out on the internet and make money by hanging out on the internet.
That's
playing, playing Farmville.
It's so narcissistic. It's how to monetize your narcissism.
It's how honkies and crackers make money.
What do you call it, a honky and a cracker? No, honky.
You are...
What was coming up this week on the Kaiser Report?
The TV show.
Well, we're interviewing Sandeep Jaitley from Bullion Basis. He works with Faketa, Antel Faketa. And, a lot of people had this question because Professor Faketa said that the price of gold is headed for extinction. And I posted that. It was a long report. And I chose that sentence as the headline on MaxKaiser.com, and a lot of people were
What do you mean by that? I think you told me a few days ago, and then I
No. Well, we're going to make it fresh. You're going to ask Sandeep. You're going to ask Sandeep about this because this is something that shocked everybody on the
site. Your shocking statement?
Yeah. So this is going to be that, and then Jim Rickards is coming. We're actually doing a few pre-records because we have to go away to Lisbon, but also it's a bank holiday. End of May bank holiday sort of thing.
You know, one
of
these creatively, they name these bank holidays. Bank holiday number 7. Bank holiday number 7.3-9/4. Welcome to Britain. It's not like America where it's like President's Day.
Well, this is the thing.
Memorial Day.
We're going to Lisbon, and you know, I booked the tickets, I think, last week or a few, like 10 days ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't find, like, any flights to get back on Monday or Tuesday. And I was like, what is going on?
Do you have to take a jet again? That's getting, you know, the gas alone is expensive.
We're going to have to get our friend from Mexico to come pick us up.
All right.
But there were no flights available. And then I found out it was, end of May, bank holiday.
All right.
So everybody's, like, all the few flights available to Lisbon were booked. But anyway, so we're also talking to James Howard Kunstler.
Oh, yeah. Everybody the long emergency.
The long emergency. We'll do that for the following Monday show. And I need one more guest. Actually, if you have any other ideas for who you really want us to interview this week, I have one opening.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What about Faisal Islam? I'm about to overtake him on Twitter with more followers.
You're going to talk to him about this?
Yeah, I want to talk to him about it. How come it was? I mean, I was possible to overtake him on Twitter. I mean, he's on Channel 4 News. I'm just a simple guy, a simple podcaster. How is that possible?
Yeah, right.
There he is. I'm going to get to 59,000 followers before he does. That's my
prediction. That's not a whole episode of Kaiser Report, though.
You don't
people
think so?
Don't want to know about that.
I mean,
the people don't. Yeah.
Yeah, he tweets a lot about Manchester United,
yeah.
Which is uninteresting for 99.9% of people with who have something better to do than watch these prancing fools and their inflated
even David
balls.
Beckham left. He's like he retired. He retired. He announced his retirement and he was going to retire next week.
Yeah,
and then he's just saying, "No, I'm going to leave." He's moved up his retirement by a week. So.
Oh, really? He couldn't even hang out for the last few. He's just so boring.
Yeah.
The game is so dull.
Yeah.
Because, all these Russian oligarchs, they just destroyed the beautiful game.
Well,
I remember when I didn't watch.
Beckham plays for Qatar. The Qatari royal family finances some team.
It's in Paris.
Saint-Germain. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Isn't that French anymore?
No, it's financed by the Qatari royal
family. It's all Qatar? They own the Shard. They own France. They own Greek islands.
They own it all. They own everything.
That big 3-ton Magusa in Qatar, we saw him at the Ritz. Remember he came in and he has a little hut that he sits in and talks to the people?
That wasn't him. This is one of his sons or something. Or
his son is as
like
big
as
the
Shura Council or something like
that.
You know
what was shocking in Doha was the kids with obesity problems.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the pool and there's these 200-pound, 12-year-old Qatari kids just living off the fat
of
that natural gas income. They never worked a day. I don't think they have assisted breathing.
Yeah.
They have somebody who just like pushes down on their lungs all day to get them breathe. They can't even breathe for themselves.
Yeah, we stayed at the Ritz because that was when we were working in pounds, and the pound. Remember when it went to $2.10
to the dollar?
And the Ritz seemed really cheap.
Well, I like all those dresses that they wear.
The men.
Ritz. But apparently, all the headdresses they mean where they come from. I thought it was just random, it was like a style choice.
Yeah,
like they like the Czech ones.
Yeah.
They wear the Czech. No, that means like different countries. Saudis and Qatar.
Yeah, Saudi has that red. But also the Kuwait also does the red check.
Yeah, they do the red check.
Yeah.
So if they're in France and they go to a place, they can use it as a tablecloth.
You know,
if push comes to shove, it's like a dual purpose.
That's probably not nice.
But that's good. They're buying all these things. They're buying in France. They bought a French football club. They're in Paris. They're in some place. They spill wine on the tablecloth. Voila!
But remember,
problem solved.
Remember how cool it was when the king of Oman was there at the Ritz when we were there.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fat dude too.
Oh, I think I mixed him up with the king of Qatar.
Yeah, but he had remember all those. He had it must have been about 40 or 50 security guards around him.
Yeah,
all carrying swords.
Yeah,
remember that?
That's right.
Pretty cool.
That's not very effective against a MAC-10, is it?
Well. Yeah. Well, if you have 50 of them already, against one MAC-10.
Yeah, you could do a wall of steel to protect the emperor from the MAC-10.
Yeah.
I think we got to go. It's time to leave.
Okay, well, that was this week's episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London.
We have to thank our host.
We're going to thank our host, Brian.
Brian from London Real TV.
London Real TV, yeah. London Check Real him TV. Out on Twitter and on YouTube.
Yeah, it's got all the best stuff on London Real TV.
Including a fantastic interview with Max Keiser.
Yeah, I was on it, but you got some very interesting people. It's
eclectic. Jacques Fresco.
It's eclectic.
A lot of people in our audience like Jacques Fresco.
Jacques Fresco, exactly. Yeah. Who is
the
famous guy?
Venus Project.
The Venus Project.
We get hassled about the Venus Project a lot.
That's right. Well, later we'll be doing the Penis Project, so I'm looking forward to that later this
evening. Okay. It's time to go.
All right, bye, y'all.